Science Podcast for Tuesday.
USGS, Oregon Science Podcast.
Hello and welcome. This is the USGS Oregon Science Podcast for Tuesday, February 23rd, 2010. I'm Steve Sobieszczyk. For today's episode, we're examining a disease that has been plaguing frogs and other amphibians around the globe. Throughout the world, scientists have witnessed a rapid decline of amphibian populations, which is thought to be caused by the fungal disease chytridiomycosis. The chytrid fungus has been linked to large die-offs within amphibian populations and is prevalent on at least four continents. Scientists with the USGS in Oregon have been studying its effects here in the Pacific Northwest. In today's episode, we'll have two interviews. First, our own Damon Runberg will sit down with USGS amphibian ecologist Mike Adams and discuss what the chytrid fungus is, how it affects amphibian populations, and what impact it has had in Oregon. Later in the show, we'll play a segment of an interview I recorded earlier with USGS hydrologist Chauncey Anderson and ecologist Tara Chestnut. They'll bring us up to speed on how we monitor the spread of the chytrid fungus and what the future holds for amphibians. But first, Damon and Mike will give us some background on the chytrid fungus and what effect it's having on amphibians in Oregon. Please, stick around.
Welcome back to the USGS Oregon Science Podcast. I'm Damon Runberg. For this segment, we'll be speaking with U.S. Geological Survey amphibian ecologist Mike Adams about his work on the chytrid fungus and its effect on amphibian populations. Welcome, Mike. Thanks for joining us today.
You bet. Thanks.
Can you start by telling our listeners what the chytrid fungus is?
Well, it's a fungus, like the name says. It's pathogenic to amphibians. It was discovered, I think, late 90s or so. And it's something that affects skin and keratinized tissues on amphibians and seems to be a problem.
Do you have any idea where the fungus comes from?
Oh, there's a hypothesis that it originated in Africa, but we're not sure.
Does the fungus infect all species, or are certain species more likely to obtain it?
It specifically affects amphibians, and I think we found it in every species that we've looked at. You know, it seems more prevalent in some species than in other species, but we didn't find it in tail frogs, I guess. That's the one species where we have not found it, and I don't think I know if anybody find it, but I don't think there's been that many samples either. So,
when looking at infected frogs, can you see any visual signs of infection?
You can see it in tadpoles sometimes. It shows up just as looks like deformities in the tooth rows in their mouth parts. You have to look pretty closely to see it. And if it's really severe, there'll be inflammation in the tissue. The tadpoles survive with it, and they'll go ahead and transform. And in the adults, you know, it's more like you see that they seem sick and lethargic and that sort of thing, or adults and juveniles. And it can kill them.
Do these infected frogs and tadpoles spread the fungus amongst one another, or is there another source of infection?
Yeah, we really don't know how it spreads. I mean, it can probably spread through populations by direct contact, but we know that the spores can show up in water samples, which suggests that, you know, within a water body it can spread that way. But beyond that, we don't know how it spreads. It seems to spread pretty well, but we don't know how it's doing that.
Is there a link between the chytrid fungus and deaths among frogs and toads?
Yes, there's definitely pretty good observations of the fungus arriving in naive populations that haven't experienced it before, and of quite massive die-offs following shortly thereafter. But there's good observations of that happening in some cases. There's also lots of observations of populations having the fungus, and we don't see any apparent problem. That doesn't mean there's not a problem. That doesn't mean there wasn't a problem in the past or that there might not be a problem in the future, but it seems to be quite widespread to the extent that we can tell by just showing up every now and then, which is not a real great extent. We're frequently not seeing problems. In fact, in my studies, we're never seeing problems.
Have you or other scientists found a difference between amphibian species regarding their response to the fungus?
Only just that we find differences in the prevalence of the fungus within populations. and among populations. There's certain species, like both species of spotted frog, where we almost always find it. In one species of spotted frog, the Oregon spotted frog, I think every single population in Oregon has the fungus present, and it seems to be fairly prevalent within the population, meaning that a lot of individuals in the population have it. And for other species, it's not nearly so common. But as far as how that's affecting them, we don't know. And in fact, we don't know if finding that it's prevalent for a certain species means that there's a problem for that species, or maybe that's a good thing. It might mean that they persist perfectly well with the fungus, or maybe that they experienced mortality in the past and now they are more resistant to the fungus. We don't know how to interpret that information. We just know that in some species it's very common and widespread, and in other species it's not.
I understand that you found frog and toad populations were more likely to acquire the fungus if there was a high level of human activity in the region. What is it about this human disturbance that may lead to an amphibian species being more vulnerable?
We don't know. We don't even know that there's a connection. We just found a correlation. There happened to be a greater prevalence. It was really the only pattern that we found. There was greater prevalence of the fungus within populations, meaning a higher proportion of the populations were infected in areas with this higher human footprint index. And why that is, we don't know. We really don't know.
How high of a human footprint are you talking about? Would a large footprint be within a city or more like a hiking trail?
It's a 10-point scale, and I think the highest we got on there was about a 7, and what would that represent? It certainly wasn't within a city. Typically, I think it was heavily agricultural.
Since you said it's difficult to tell just by looking at a frog if it's infected, can you describe the process of determining if a frog has the fungus?
Yeah, we catch the frog. We've got this little rayon swab, looks like a Q-tip, that we rub around on the skin, and there's certain particular places we like to look for between toes and on mouth parts and some hard keratinized tissue. And we rub it around on there. We've got a few steps for kind of preserving that sample, and as far as our role in it goes, that's about it. We ship it off to a lab where they use a method called polymerase chain reaction to specifically amplify genetic material from this species of fungus, this particular species. And if it's present, by amplifying it, they'll be able to determine that it's there. And basically that returns a yes, no, it's there kind of a result, or even a quantitative result about how much material is there.
So it seems up until this point in Oregon, the fungus has been less harmful compared to other regions. Should we here, the Pacific Northwest, be worried about future amphibian losses due to the spread of the chytrid fungus?
Yeah, we're pretty concerned about it. We just don't quite know what to think about it, but we see that it's causing some severe problems elsewhere, and we don't know what the difference is, and we don't know if perhaps this is going to kind of sit here until we get climatic conditions, just the weather in a particular year that is more conducive to a severe infection or something like that that will cause die-offs. And we don't know if maybe that's happened in the past and just wasn't really observed here or what. But yeah, we're definitely concerned about it.
Thank you very much for your time today, Mike.
You bet. Thanks.
Well, now that we have discussed the chytrid fungus and its effect on amphibians, we'll find out how USGS scientists studied the spread of the fungus through our lakes and rivers. Make sure to stick around.
Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Mike Adams. And now it's time for our final segment in our all-amphibian episode. We are joined by two USGS scientists, hydrologist Chauncey Anderson and ecologist Tara Chestnut. Both Chauncey and Tara work out of the USGS Oregon Water Science Center here in Portland, Oregon. Tara is also a PhD candidate at Portland State University. They're here to share with us what the future holds for the monitoring efforts and the spread of the chytrid fungus in our lakes and rivers. Chauncey, I figure I'll start with you. Before we get into a discussion of what chytrid detection methods you guys use, I was wondering to what extent and for how long has the USGS been involved in amphibian research?
So the USGS has a amphibian research and monitoring initiative, which was started around 2000 and has been working for the last 10 years or so on a variety of issues related to amphibians across the country. The program involves herpetologists, hydrologists, climate change people, geographers, and various other ecologists, disease pathologists, quite a wide variety of disciplines within USGS. So the USGS has, since the around about 2003, 2004, recognized the threat of chytrid fungus for various amphibian populations. And in 2004 and 2005 was when my group started doing some work trying to detect chytrid in water as an attempt to be able to provide complementary tool to those that were analyzing for it on amphibian skin.
Tara, your turn. Can you give a little background on the chytrid fungus and what makes the amphibian strain so unique?
Chytrids are a very ancient fungus, and there are about 1,200 species that are described. Most of them are plant decomposers. They decompose diatoms and algae, and about 10% of the fungal flora inside of ruminants, so cows and bison, are chytrids. They're well distributed across the environment. What's unique about the amphibian chytrid is that it is the only chytrid fungus that affects a vertebrate species.
So what is the field testing method that you guys have been working on? What are you testing for, and how will scientists actually use what they learn from this in the future?
The method that we developed uses a genetic test for the DNA of chytrid fungus to be able to detect whether the fungus is in a water body that we sample. Similar tests can be used to test whether the DNA is on a frog and seeing if the frogs are infected. But in the absence of infected frogs, if it is in a pond, chances are good that we can detect it if we sample at the right time of year and if we sample enough water. The next question is, where are we going with that? And there's actually a lot of different ways that can be used. One possible use for that is for instance, reintroductions of threatened or endangered species in places where they have previously been extirpated or otherwise are no longer present. So there have been several instances where people have tested ponds that are likely candidates for reintroduction, and then depending on the results of the water, then that's one thing that would go into the consideration of reintroducing a species there. Another question that is being looked at is, what is the relationship between presence in water and presence on an amphibian? Which came first? There's sort of a chicken and egg question, and part of the work we're doing is trying to be able to use the water test to give us an idea of if there is a way to predict whether species there will become infected, what the exposure routes are, and also get a sense for the timing of when infection may occur.
Are the results from this test just presence-absence, or can you actually determine the amount of fungus present in the water?
Well, so the first response is we can do this quantitatively. It can either be quantitative or presence-not-detected type of an approach. Particularly in the water, our method is a quantitative method. What we don't know yet is what's the exposure mechanism. Is there a dose response type of a interaction going on where it needs to have a certain threshold, for instance, density of chytrid zoospores in the water for frogs to become infected. A lot of it may have to do with where do they spend their various life history stages. Are they in the mud? Are they in the plants? And how are they exposed to chytrid? And we're really not there yet in being able to answer those questions, but that's the direction.
And how does this relate to what you do in the lab?
What I do in the lab is a two-step process. The first is after we extract the DNA, I ask just the presence-absence question. So is chytrid DNA present in my sample? And if the answer to that is yes, then I go to the second step, then try to measure how much chytrid is there. It saves us time, and it also is more cost effective to approach it that way because the tests are fairly expensive to run. And if we can determine whether it's there or not first, then we don't have to take it to the second step.
We spent most of the episode talking about how devastating the chytrid fungus is. Have there been any attempts to develop a vaccine or a cure? And what about natural immunity? Are certain species less susceptible to the disease than others?
There has been some work looking at various treatments for individual animals or maybe several individuals at one time and a couple different types of solutions that animals have been bathed in, and it appears to help them cure themselves or helps kill the amphibian chytrid from them. how to treat a larger, even an individual pond, much less an entire ecosystem, is a very different question. There's all kinds of considerations that go in. We don't know if it can be done effectively and if the amphibians that are treated once will be susceptible to it again.
Lastly, what's the take-home message for our listeners? Is this disease something that will wipe out frogs everywhere? What should we know about the chytrid fungus?
It's a potentially important disease in many parts of the world, including here, but it also doesn't necessarily mean the end for every species that's out there, because some species are less susceptible than others, and some species may have sort of adjusted to it in their populations already.
I think that the take-home message there is that we're most concerned about species that have never been exposed to it before, and because until very recently we didn't have reliable methods to detect it in the environment, we didn't know how to detect amphibian chytrid unless we had infected animals.
And a die-off in process.
Mm-hmm, and potentially die-off. And so what our work allows researchers to do, not just here at the USGS, but in other places, is be proactive about monitoring not just the amphibians, but also their environment, so that we can have more tools that allow us to predict areas that may be candidates for new exposure, so that places where we haven't found chytrid before, we can test for it in the water and develop management plans that will perhaps allow for the conservation of species that we believe haven't been exposed to chytrid before.
Well, that's all the questions I have. Thanks, guys, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
That is it for this month's podcast. For links to topics discussed, check out the show transcripts on our website at or.usgs.gov/podcasts. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the USGS Oregon Science Podcast, please email us at oregonpodcast@usgs.gov. Thank you for listening. To hear more about other research the USGS is doing around the country, check out the USGS social media website at usgs.gov/social media. There you can listen to other USGS podcasts, as well as find links to USGS on Twitter and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Steve Sobieszczyk. This podcast is a product of the U.S. Geological Survey, Department of the Interior.